From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. About half of Americans use alternative medicine or of one kind or another these days. 10% use it on their children. It is a $34 billion a year industry and an industry with almost no oversight. Vitamins, nutritional supplements, acupuncture, touch therapy, herbs, hormones, shark cartilage, milk, thistle. It's an enormous realm. My guest today says we've gone too far down this path, that we're fooling ourselves and hurting ourselves, believing in magic. This hour on Point, a big skeptic's hard new look at alternative medicine. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you ready to fight for your milk thistle, your echinacea? Are we fooling ourselves? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We will hear later in this hour from a big alternative medicine practitioner. But joining me now from Northfield, New Jersey is Dr. Paul Offit, author of the new book, Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. Dr. Offit is Chief of Infectious Diseases and Director of the Vaccine Education Center at Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, Professor of Pediatrics at UPenn School of Medicine, co-inventor of the vaccine for rotavirus, credited for saving hundreds of infants' lives daily. Dr. Paul Offit, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Boy, you are tough on this big world that so many Americans have embraced. We'll look at exactly where your criticism goes, but if it's so bad, why do you think so many Americans have embraced at least a part of it, and a lot of Americans, a lot of it?
Because I think we do believe in magic. I think we look for that medicine that makes everything okay. And at some level, it's there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, for example, if your doctor tells you to take chondroitin sulfate and glucosamine because you have joint pain, it's not going to hurt you. And although there are studies done showing that it's not any better than placebo, it certainly is might work as a placebo. And if it means that you can feel better and avoid things like non-steroidal anti-inflammatories or COX-2 inhibitors like Celebrex or Bextra, that's great. Where you get into trouble here is for something like the concentrated garlic. I mean, if you look at these products like Garlicin or Garlic, it says on the label for cardiovascular health. And what that means is it's the wink and nod of this industry is that there's a notion out there that it lowers bad cholesterol, so-called low-density lipoprotein cholesterol. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not true. I mean, it's a very easy study to do. It's been done by the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine, which is part of the National Institutes of Health. It doesn't lower LDL cholesterol. Now, if you're a person who has high cholesterol and you have a risk for cardiovascular disease and you choose to take that instead of statins like, say, Lipitor, yep, you're making a choice that could really hurt you. That's where alternative medicine, I think, fails.
So there's garlic and cholesterol. You describe an enormous realm of other examples here, many, many 50,000 plus supplements and vitamins and on and on. I mean, but you're quite candid in saying that you see the root of this in no small part going to a kind of disillusionment with modern medicine.
Fair enough. I think modern medicine has its limits. I guess the point I'm trying to make in this book is just because one is disillusioned with certain aspects of modern medicine doesn't mean that alternative medicine should get a free pass. This industry shouldn't exist under an untouchable halo, and I think one should bring the same level of skepticism that one brings to conventional medicine to this industry as well, because remember, it's an industry.
How do you define alternative medicine? What are the boundaries of what you're looking at, what you're not looking at?
Well, I guess I could look at this in two ways. One, you could argue there's no such thing as alternative medicine. If alternative medicine works, then one could simply call it medicine. And if an alternative medicine doesn't work, then it's not an alternative. I guess for the purpose of this book, I've sort of put that under the alternative medicine under categories like homeopathy, naturopathy, acupuncture, chiropractic, and these megavitamins as well as dietary supplements.
Are megavitamins different from just daily vitamins, or is that the same thing?
No, very different. So daily vitamins or so-called multivitamins usually contain at or about the recommended daily allowance of vitamins that we should be taking. Certainly vitamins are necessary for us to convert food into energy. By megavitamins, what I mean is quantities of vitamins vastly in excess of this recommended daily allowance or RDA, often 5 times, 8 times, 10 times, 20 times that. I mean, if you pop, for example, 1,000 milligram of vitamin C into your mouth and and easily swallowed. I mean, that's the equivalent. That's 8 times the recommended daily allowance. You'd have to eat 14 oranges to get that, or 8 cantaloupes to get that amount. And maybe your stomach is only so big for a reason, and you shouldn't, you know, mess around with Mother Nature. Don't take these large quantities of supplements when they can certainly be hurtful. And now we know that megavitamins certainly can be hurtful. This is the most amazing thing, actually, in the writing of this book for me, is that if you look at people who take large quantities of vitamin A, vitamin E, beta carotene, which is an A precursor, and selenium, they increase the risk of cancer, increase the risk of heart disease, and shorten their life. Vitamins contained or taken as large doses can hurt you, and most people don't know that because the industry essentially markets it away.
Can we back up for a second? 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C. I've taken that for stretches of time and fancied that I had fewer colds and felt terrific. Have I hurt myself?
I think you can potentially hurt yourself. Certainly if you take it, I think once when you have a cold or occasionally when you have colds, you're not going to hurt yourself. But if you take it sort of on a more regular basis, as many people do with some of these megavitamins, including celebrities who are often sort of in our face and telling us to do this, you can potentially hurt yourself. It's certainly true that vitamin C doesn't prevent colds and doesn't treat colds. But you could argue that believing that your cold is getting better means something. And I think probably goes a long way to helping you get better. But, you know, if we're going to use these things as placebos, then why don't we just use placebos, you know, like a sugar pill?
You write about the hope business, and you cite the example, sad example, of Steve Jobs, founder of Apple in particular, and his cancer. What happened there? Remind us.
Right. So Steve Jobs had pancreatic cancer. And I think when we hear that, we assume largely correctly that that equals a death sentence. But that's a different kind of tumor. That's an adenocarcinoma than what he had. He had a neuroendocrine tumor that just happened to be in his pancreas. If you look at the historic data, people have a 95 to 100% chance of survival if they just have early surgery associated with that pancreatic tumor. He chose to wait, not have surgery, instead chose this alternative route of acupuncture and bowel cleansings and sort of large quantities of fruit and vegetable juices. And by the time he had surgery, it was too late. I mean, he really had made a choice to, I'm sure unknown to him, but he made a choice to really end his life prematurely. It's sad.
But he was looking for something other than what was on offer from modern medicine. And obviously, millions and millions of people are in that same frame of mind. I mean, you've been out talking about this and about this book. Do you find an American public receptive to your argument or pushing back and saying, come on, doctor, we're way down this road, too late? This is what we do today.
Yeah, B, way down this road, too late. I think that it's a religion. You know, when you choose to sort of hold this religion up to scrutiny and you've attacked at some level the church of vitamins and supplements, you get tremendous pushback, including from the industry, including from industry lobbyists. And I've certainly gotten that pushback, but because it's an industry. It's interesting, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal a year or so ago, and it followed two studies that were done, excellent studies. One was in the New England Journal of Medicine about these megavitamins. And what they found was just what I'd said before, that it actually surprisingly increased one's risk of cancer and heart disease. And the title of that article in the Wall Street Journal was, "Is this the end of popping vitamins? You know, can we really convince people that the data are what they are?" And there was a spokesman for the industry that said, "We just ignore these studies. This doesn't affect our business," because they know that with advertising, that people are going to be far more likely to watch commercials than they are to read the New England Journal of Medicine or the Journal of the American Medical Association. And they're right. They can make it so that consumers don't know these risks.
And remind us of why, if these are put forward as health solutions, kind of medical alternative, but medical solutions, why is there no oversight or regulation?
Because in 1994, the government of the United States, created something called the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, which was called rightly by the New York Times the Snake Oil Protection Act. Because what that did was that essentially removed the Food and Drug Administration from oversight of this industry. So now these companies didn't really have to prove their claims or admit their harms. And I think we suffered that. It was an education act that had nothing to do with education and everything to do with the consumer not knowing what they're buying.
So the vitamins, the supplements, all of it, none of it's tested. It's all just based, when people take these, on the faith of whoever makes it or whoever's on TV promoting it?
Right, but remember, this industry can't make specific medical claims, so it's the wink and nod claim. It's the joint support formula, the prostate support formula, the heart support formula. They're not allowed to say, for example, shrinks your prostate, because the minute they do that, they've made a specific medical claim and they will fall under the FDA. And if you look on those bottles, they all say, you know, this is not intended for treatment of a specific disease. You have to look closely on the bottle to see that, but it does say that.
Are you just a prisoner of Western medicine, blind to the, you know, centuries, eons old wisdom of the East? And the, you know, I mean, this is how these things are often put, that there's a lot of wisdom that Western medicine has just looked past, kind of in its hubris, that we need to tap to become more whole and organic and more well.
Right. Yeah. The term Western medicine is one I actually don't understand. I mean, certainly the medicine that we practice, for example, in the United States, that has influences from all over the world. I mean, to me, it's always about the scientific method. I mean, if you're going to make a claim, a medical claim, a scientific claim, you can prove that or not prove that in a scientific or medical study. So that's what I ask for here, just evidence. And this sort of appeal to the ancients, this notion of ancient wisdom. I mean, if the ancients were so wise about health and disease, they certainly were remarkably quiet about it. Maybe it's because most of them never lived past 30.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about America's love affair with alternative medicine. It's a $34 billion business of supplements and acupuncture and touch. One big doctor says it's wrong, unproven, and maybe dangerous. Dr. Paul Offit is with us. His new book is Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. It is, of course, not hard to find big proponents of exactly the kind of treatments that Dr. Offit is so critical of. Here's Dr. Mehmet Oz from television's Dr. Oz, promoting alternative medicine. And this was 2010, discussing his belief in alternative medicine.
And I know firsthand the amazing miracles we can achieve with modern Western medicine. But I also know that for centuries, people around the world have developed alternative therapies to treat the body, mind, and the soul. So today, I'm revealing my ultimate alternative medicine secrets. If you've got a medical problem you can't solve, you may find the answer in the next few minutes.
There's Dr. Oz. We've got Dr. Offit from Children's Hospital in Philadelphia. You know, Dr. Oz didn't just come out of nowhere. He's medically trained heart surgeon, I think, Dr. Offit. How do you account for his and many other big medically trained doctors' very deep embrace of alternative medicine?
I think, you know, there's something Dr. Oz said on his show once that I think is emblematic of the point I'm trying to make. He said that when his children get sick, his wife gives them homeopathic arnica. And if they don't get better, then she calls him. Now, homeopathic medicines are made by taking an active ingredient and diluting them to the point that they're not there anymore. I mean, they are by definition placebo. They're a gram of sugar, they're a teaspoon of water, whatever the final preparation is diluted in. So it's absolutely placebo. Now, you could argue that by doing that, instead of giving children, say, cough and cold preparations, which contain active ingredients like pseudoephedrine that can be quite dangerous, yep, that's the better move. That's actually better to give them that.
To given start that with most, homeopathic, you're saying?
Yeah, because you could argue that most outpatient diseases in children are self-limited. So mm-hmm. Let's at least not give them something that hurts them, and homeopathic arnica certainly can't hurt them since it doesn't contain any active ingredients. But the slippery slope there, and this is what worries me a little about Dr. Oz, who, by the way, is trained at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine, where I teach. But he when you do that, when you sort of buy into this notion that homeopathy is anything other than placebo, you can get into trouble. So there are, for example, parents who have given their children a homeopathic bronchodilator instead of a real bronchodilator, and a child died of asthma that didn't have to. So once you buy into the notion that homeopathy is anything other than placebo, it's dangerous. But I want to make the point that I'm not trying to do a complete smackdown of alternative medicine, because I do think that when people say the mind-body connection, that is real. And that when you use the term placebo, I wish we had a different word, because when people hear that word, they think it's dismissive. dismissive and people are saying it's just all in your mind and it's not real. But the mind is not a trivial place to be. And we've learned that people can, in fact, learn to release their own endorphins, which are pain sort of relieving chemicals that our body makes, or can learn to upregulate or downregulate their own immune system, or even learn to release their own dopamine. So that's not a trivial thing. I think figuring out the best and least burdensome ways to do that is a good thing. And that's where alternative medicine lives, largely. They live in the placebo response, which is a good thing. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But that's pretty dismissive.
I mean, you've got 50,000 plus supplements and vitamins that you talk about here. I mean, do we need all that for the placebo effect? You describe Dr. Oz's, you know, concepts on homeopathy, even chiropractic, as the kind of devolution in medical thinking.
Right. Well, you'd like to believe, I mean, we live as compared to 1900, if you compare two people in 2000 to 1900, we live 30 years longer than we used to. And the reason that we live longer has nothing to do with astrology or acupuncture meridians or homeopathy and everything to do that we've, I think, figured out a lot about the physiology and body and biology of the way our body works and have made vaccines and have realized the germ theory isn't just a theory and that, you know, we can purify drinking water and we smoke less. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for why we live longer that have nothing to do with alternative medicine.
But,
you're right. I think if we're going to do the placebo response, you're right. That why spend all this money? Isn't there a less expensive way to do that? Yes, I'm sure there is a less expensive way to do
it. Why do you think this country's embrace of alternative medicine has grown so dramatically in the same period that those advances you're talking about have come on stream? I mean, you point out that 30, 40 years ago, and look, I'm as susceptible to this sort of nature, ancient ways kind of ethos probably as anybody else. But 30, 40 years ago, people just said, oh, forget it. That's crazy. And now we don't. Why do you think that change has come about?
I think we all want what's best for our health. And the alternative medicine industry is a very powerful industry. They have a lot of money. They are media savvy. They're politically connected. And ever since the 1994 Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, they are an unfettered industry. They are not tied down to actually prove that when they say something works, that it works, or tied down to prove that when they say something is safe, that it really is safe. That's a pretty good deal for them and not a very good deal for us. And I think we're susceptible to that because it's very easy to appeal to our notion that we want better health and that here's this magic medicine that can do it, even if it doesn't.
What about the idea that the very sort of Western science, or as you would have it, science, that modern medicine is part of is in some way messing with us? And we have a lot of response to you online. Flipping through it here, it looks, you know, you get a lot of pushback, and you must know this. But here's Nightingale writes to us online. Says, the reason we need supplements now and must stand up without fear to those who will take this freedom away is that we can't get all our needed nutrients from food now, as our grandparents and great-grandparents did. The soil, water, and air are contaminated by toxic pollution throughout most of the world, you know, and on and on. We need this because we've been, you know, the general environment's been degraded.
Yeah, I just don't think that's true. I think that if you eat a healthy diet, especially rich in fruits and vegetables, that there are reasonable data to show that you will have a lesser risk of heart disease and a lesser risk of cancer and prolong your life. I don't think there's any reason that one has to supplement that diet with a few exceptions. Obviously, folic acid for women of childbearing age. I think there are some data to suggest that omega-3 fatty acids may help with cardiovascular health, although the data really are pretty thin these days. And same with vitamin D and calcium for thinning bones, although I think the bloom has to some extent come off that rose too. But no, I think for the most part that we do get what we need in a healthy diet. But certainly the industry convinces us that we don't, and that if you don't do it their way, that you're going to suffer, although I would argue that if anything, the opposite is true.
Dr. Paul Offit lists maybe three or four omega-3, folic acid, out of the, 50,000 plus supplements and vitamins that are out there. Everything else, he says, forget about it. In his new book, Do You Believe in Magic? We'll go in a moment to Dr. Terry Grossman in Colorado, who is all about alternative medicine. But we have so many callers for you, Dr. Offit. Let's go to Georgia. Columbus, Georgia. Gwen is calling. Hi, Gwen. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
How are you all today?
Great.
Take my call.
Sure. What do you think? What do you know?
Well, I'm a licensed massage therapist here in the state of Georgia, so I provide touch therapy that's very meaningful to helping other people find solutions to problems in their lives that they haven't found through what we call Western medicine. Touch medicine has been around for thousands of years, and I'm actually on my way to my chiropractor's office now to have an adjustment.
So you not only practice it, you receive it as well, Gwen.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I had a frozen shoulder that absolutely refused to move. I couldn't raise it above shoulder level. Went to an acupuncturist, had one treatment, and my arm shot up and hit me in the head. It hadn't moved in 2 years. I cannot call that a placebo effect under any circumstances because it absolutely worked.
Dr. Offit, what do you say to Gwen? She's there in Georgia on her way, a touch therapist on her way to a chiropractor, and she believes it.
Okay, here's what I think acupuncture is an interesting issue. So acupuncture is the product of 2nd century BC China. This is a culture that not only didn't believe in dissection, but anybody who dissected the human body was punished by death, a real disincentive. So they believed there were 365 different parts of the body because there are 365 days of the year, and they believed that there were 12 meridians, these sort of longitudinal arcs into which one inserted needles, because there are 12 great rivers in China. So if you believe that the human anatomy is not based on rivers in China or days of the year, then they were making it up. And there's nothing accurate about acupuncture. In fact, studies have shown it doesn't matter where you put the needles. It doesn't even matter whether you put the needles under the skin. Acupressure seems to work just as well. Now, that doesn't mean it doesn't work. I think there are people who do benefit, and maybe Gwen is one of them, that you can learn to actually release your own endorphins. And that's been proven by giving a naloxone, which is an endorphin blocker, to people who do benefit from acupuncture. All I'm saying is that I think that it's a value for those, for example, who practice acupuncture to figure out what it is about that interaction that is therapeutic. I think Gwen's right. I think massage therapy is great. Anything that reduces stress, and we now know to be the mediators of stress, is a good thing. All I'm saying is that if acupuncture works and it works without putting the needles under the skin, then don't put the needles under the skin, because the needles can and have been shown to induce HIV, to introduce inadvertently human immunodeficiency virus, hepatitis B virus, hepatitis C virus, and sometimes the needles break off and have lodged in hearts and livers and lungs. That's not common. It's but about 80.
But any
or so
kind of needle
die.
Can introduce a problem and make trouble. I mean, in standard medicine, those needles can also be misused or not clean. I mean, you mock acupuncture because it has, you know, language and ideas associated with thousands of year old stuff, but it's going on now, and there's Gwen saying, works for me.
I'm saying if it works, then figure out what it is about that that works. I mean, modern medicine doesn't have put in, I mean, acupuncture, we don't leave needles in there. I mean, needles are used primarily to withdraw blood or give intravenous
But of course,
fluids.
They can be dirty and they can be poorly used and do get misused in modern medicine as well.
Of course. I mean, conventional medicine is fraught with danger, no doubt about it. All I'm saying is that I think acupuncture or much in alternative medicine is put under this sort of untouchable halo that it's just all wonderful because it represents ancient medicine. It's just not true. Just bring the same skepticism to conventional medicine, to alternative medicine, as you bring to conventional medicine. That's all I'm saying.
Brina in Somerville, South Carolina. Hi, Brina. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Listen, alternative medicine has been around here since the beginning of time. My grandmother, being from Jamaica, was always into herbs, as they call bush medicine. I mean, there's definitely a place in society. What's happening now, there's so many drug use and adverse reactions. People are turning to Mother Earth to try to get relief. I can't even imagine not being able to get herbs or homeopathy. I've got three daughters. They were raised on homeopathic medicine. I had one daughter that had severe asthma. We went through the whole traditional realm trying to cure the asthma. It wasn't until she got introduced to homeopathic medicine where she got cured. I had endometriosis, had surgery, threatened to take out ovaries and everything at the age of 21. It wasn't until I started taking courses in homeopathic medicine and herbs where at the age of 30 I started having children. I mean, if it wasn't for me digging for a natural medicine cures, I would have been without children. My child would have been hooked on steroids, vegan, and asthma.
Brina, I really appreciate your call. Dr. Offit, what do you say? This desire to get closer to the earth and away from a medicine chest of modern pharmaceuticals that Brina fears are overused.
Where do people think most modern medicines come from? I mean, if you look at the formulary of Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, about 40% of the drugs that we have on our formulary are from plants. When a child comes into our hospital, say with malaria, which happens more frequently than you would imagine, we don't give them cinchona bark to chew on. We give them quinine, which was the source from which cinchona bark was the source, because we know that by giving it that way, that we know exactly exactly how many milligrams are in that tablet. That, you know, natural, the term natural is probably the most used marketing term, but not everything natural is good. There are certainly herbs and plants out there that can kill you. I mean, you know, arguably Ebola virus and poliovirus are natural. Mosquitoes and lice are natural. I mean, the glasses I have on my head right now are not natural, but allow me to see. I've just lost meaning with that word natural.
We hear that loud and clear, but it's so interesting to see how skepticism about modern medicine promotes, encourages people to look around. And we all know we've got issues with the way prescription drugs are used. Pretty soon we're into this clash of cultures, or science and magic, as Dr. Offit would have it. Paul Offit's new book is Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. I want to bring in that alternative medicine view here. From Golden, Colorado, Dr. Terry Grossman joins us. Medical doctor focused on integrative medicine, alternative medicine, nutritional medicine, anti-aging medicine. Founder and director of the Grossman Wellness Center there, a prominent facility in Colorado. Terry Grossman, Dr. Grossman, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. It's my pleasure.
So here's Paul Offit, and you can hear his sincerity. You know well the kind of education he's had. You know, you had something similar in your day. And he looks out at this big American embrace of alternative medicine and says, too much. Stop. You're part of that realm. Is he right?
Well, I disagree with Dr. Offit, although I do respect his opinion. You know, just looking at a few things that have been discussed so far, for instance, as far as nutrition goes, yeah, he's right that, you know, Americans could get most of their nutrition from their diet, but the fact is that 9 out of 10 Americans are deficient in one or more essential vitamins and minerals. At least 70% of the American public does not get the Department of Agriculture and American Cancer Society recommended 5 or more servings of fresh fruits and vegetables a day. So I think that there is a time and a place for supplementation for the majority of people.
Dr. Offit, what about it? We know there are plenty of diets out there that aren't good. So here comes Terry Grossman and others, Dr. Grossman, to say we can help you out with that.
Yeah, the only thing I'm saying is be careful. I think when people, for example, use this sort of multivitamins as a fallback position, feeling that maybe they're not getting enough in their diet, although I think most people don't need it, and frankly, it makes for a lot of expensive urine, that doesn't hurt you. Where people need to be careful, and I can't imagine Dr. Grossman would disagree with this, that when you take these large quantities of supplemental vitamins, vastly in excess of the recommended daily allowance, there are a solid 20 studies done by excellent groups and universities published in excellent journals that have been reproducibly done showing that that is a risk. And all I'm saying is that I think that many people out there don't know of that risk because this is a powerful industry that has had the capacity to market that risk away. And it's dangerous.
Dr. Grossman, you're not just into multivitamins. You are into megavitamins, very big doses of some, aren't you?
In some cases, I believe that we can use supplementation to treat disease as opposed to using prescription drugs, although in my practice I obviously use both. But in terms of the hazards and the risks of taking vitamins, I think it's of value to look at a report from the American Association of Poison Control Centers. They looked in 2010 at the number of deaths, for instance, from multiple vitamin formulations. And they came up with a grand total of 0. They looked at relatively more dangerous fat-soluble vitamins. They can build up in the body, vitamins A, D, E. Number of deaths per year, 0. They looked at water-soluble vitamins, the C and the B vitamins. Again, 0 deaths. They looked at amino acids, herbs, and minerals.
We get it. Small numbers there. We've got to take a break right here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about America's love affair with alternative medicine. It's a big $34 billion business of supplements and acupuncture and more. One big doctor, my guest today, says it's wrong, unproven, and maybe dangerous. Dr. Paul Offit is with us. He's chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases, director of the Vaccine Education Center at Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, professor at University of Pennsylvania Medical School, and author of the new book, Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative medicine. He says we've just gone way too far down this road, in his view. On the other hand, Dr. Terry Grossman is with us from Golden, Colorado, and the Grossman Wellness Center. He says, no, you need it. Integrative medicine, let's go there. He's co-author with Ray Kurzweil, who now is a big thought guru for Google and talks about the singularity and living forever, co-author of Fantastic Voyage, Live Long Enough to Live Forever. A few vitamins involved in that by their formulation. Paul Offit, here's Jen writing to us online. She says, please address the issue of money. She writes, there are huge lobbyists on the side of synthetic medication. I guess she would call that, that's what she's calling standard pharmacology, that stand to make millions off of prescription meds. Why would companies want doctors to prescribe vitamins when they could instead have consumers taking expensive prescriptions? How do you see how money plays into all of this, Dr. Offit?
This is the part that amazes me the most. I think I give credit to the alternative medicine industry's ability to convince the American public that this is anything other than Big Pharma. This is Big Pharma. I mean, if you look, who makes megavitamins? It's Pfizer just recently bought Alisare that makes the Emergent line of products. That's the biggest of the vitamin makers in the United States. And Huffman La Roche is also in this. I mean, that the industry has been able to sort of paint themselves as just these mom-and-pop organizations that really care, it's all natural, it's made by elves, you know, and old hippies, is just wrong. This is the pharmaceutical industry, and it is Big Pharma. And there's one thing, actually, if I could respond for a second to something Dr. Grossman said earlier. Mm-hmm. If you look at the data on high doses of vitamin E, that puts one at risk of prostate cancer could not be clearer. I think it amazes me that there is not a class action lawsuit of men who have prostate cancer who have taken large quantities of vitamin E for long periods of time, saying, where was this on the label? How come I didn't see this, given all these studies that have been published in a very good journal? So, if you look at when someone dies of prostate cancer, it doesn't say vitamin E intoxication on their death certificate. It says prostate cancer. So I think, vitamins can continue to fly under the radar. And I want to reassure the public, I'm not talking about multivitamins. I'm talking about mega vitamins, vastly in excess of what is recommended for people during the day.
Here's Laura writes, and I'll bring it to you, Terry Grossman. She says, it's time for the FDA to stop supporting Big Pharma and start researching and approving natural cures. Now, we get the spin on her proposal there. But Dr. Grossman, what about it? Would you favor alternative medicine, megavitamins, and all the rest coming under the scrutiny and control of the FDA, where it wouldn't be on the market until it was tested like standard pharmaceuticals are tested, Doctor?
Well, I think that's a good idea to some degree, but I would like to address what Dr. Offit just said.
Well, hang on. Before you go away from that, why would we not do that?
There'd be no reason not to. It's just the FDA is really not concerned with the practice of medicine. They're concerned with the safety of the public. And as I mentioned earlier, we have numerous studies that indicate that vitamins are safe. Zero deaths from the poison control from an overdose of vitamins in the course of a year. At least 50% of the population takes vitamins. If we take 150 some million Americans just taking one pill a day, that's 60 billion doses of vitamins a year with no deaths. I think we don't really need that much regulation because we have a lot of evidence that these are, fundamentally safe.
So let me turn that back to you then. So you're saying you don't want FDA oversight?
Well, I think the government doesn't need to be involved in every aspect of our lives. If there were some evidence of significant toxicity with supplements, then I could see that this might be a necessity. But at this point, we have plenty of evidence that these are safe.
I mean, Dr. Offit says, look at prostate cancer and vitamin E. You've got a direct connection. That doesn't sound like safety to me, Terry.
I want to address that specific issue. Mm-hmm. And in particular, with vitamin E, so many of the studies, they use a form of vitamin E known as alpha-tocopherol. And this is a very important point, because vitamin E itself is formed of eight different four tocopherols, four tocotrienols. And in order to be safe, you need to take this blended natural form of vitamin E, not just alpha-tocopherol. And in most of the studies They just used alpha-tocopherol, which is unsafe because it causes a depletion of gamma-tocopherol, which is essential to health. So I agree with Dr. Offit. If you take large doses of alpha-tocopherol, you can increase your risk of various kinds of cancer and heart disease. So this is something that science-based nutritional physicians and practitioners have known for years. Don't take alpha-tocopherol in a vacuum. So that's really all that these studies have proven.
I'm going to put that one to the side for just a moment. Carol in Charleston, South Carolina. Carol, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. Doctor, I really agree with your comment about the law passed in, 2004 about the Quackery Protection Act?
This is 1994. You're saying Dr. Offit's right that... Okay. Why? What about it?
I think it is really important that substances be thoroughly tested before they're released to the public. Right? The FDA is supposed to test these in order to protect the public. Don't you agree?
Well, and would you have that done for ginkgo and echinacea and coconut oil and curry powder and palmetto, you know, everything that has supposedly health benefits? Do you want to see those scientifically tested before people apply them, Carol?
I think that everything should be tested, or we should... Look, it's... Wouldn't you agree that the people in this country deserve to have their interests looked out for and the substances clearly labeled so that we can avoid anything that isn't tested or unproven?
Yeah, I exactly understand that impulse. Of course, you know, you've got alternative medicine people saying we've been stampeded into Western medicine. But how about it? Thank you, Carol. Dr. Offit, how about it? Could all of this be brought under an umbrella of scrutiny comparable to what is applied to standard pharmaceuticals?
Sure. You just need to repeal that 1994 Act. And there, recently John McCain got interested in this. But for the most part, I think the political power that has been able to successfully defeat this comes from Orrin Hatch, who lives in Utah, who there are a number of these sort of, if you will, nutraceutical companies that manufacture in Utah. And they have a lot of influence and a lot of influence in Congress. And I agree with your caller, Carol, that why would one not want to have these data? Data are always good. They give you a chance to look at something to decide whether you want to use it. I mean, recently there was the FDA licensed a product for hot flashes that, you know, if you looked at the data, the efficacy was only sort of marginal, and there was a safety concern. And so, but it still got licensed. But at least you have the data. At least the consumer can look at that and say, this is not for me. If they, on the other hand, choose, say, black cohosh for their hot flashes, there are no data. And recently, in fact, there was a question about whether this product could cause liver damage. But it's all sort of reactive, and you don't have that safety efficacy profile portfolio to look at to judge whether you want to use this. And that's what the FDA makes these companies do. There's no advantage to not having those data. None.
But alternative medicine has been embraced on such an enormous scale at this point. If you said, why not get the data? I mean, to get the data on all those 50,000-plus supplements and everything else you're talking about, you'd have to kind of, wouldn't you be shutting down alternative medicine for, I don't know, 100 years while the FDA worked on all that?
No, I'd like to think that what you would be doing is you would be selecting out those things that are value. I mean, I can tell you on our formulary at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, we have really struggled with dietary supplements. I mean, they're something that's probably the fifth most commonly used class of drugs in our hospital. There are doctors who want to use it. And, you know, we often don't have safety data or efficacy data. And it's worse than that. When we have tried to get just a certificate of analysis from these companies, which just means that when you say it's, for example, 200 milligrams of coenzyme Q10, it is exactly that and nothing else, no contaminating heavy metals, nothing else. Most of these companies won't even give us that. It's that bad. This is an industry that really needs some sort of regulation for the protection of the consumer.
Dr. Grossman, why not? Why not just go through the straight up strenuous review that everything else does on the standard side?
Well, I think that, you know, doing the studies that are being increasingly done to demonstrate the value or lack of value for complementary therapies makes a lot of sense, and I'm glad to see the data coming out. It's just where we do have, for the majority of these supplements, a long history, several decades of safety. You know, bringing it under FDA regulation, per se, will increase the cost to the consumers rather dramatically. And So there are reasons. I mean, I like the idea of the research being done, and I'm very happy to see the double-blind placebo-controlled trials coming out, and we're getting more and more information all the time, and we're changing our recommendations as nutritional doctors based on these studies, so there's nothing wrong with that. But in terms of making them FDA-regulated and subjected to these type of government scrutiny, I think we'll raise the prices to the point that they'll become less accessible to the majority of people.
Joyce in Harwinton, Connecticut. Joyce, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have MS, and I've had it for 15 years. And when I first got diagnosed, I had some very kind of earthy friends, and it was sort of like the angels speaking in one ear and a devil in the other. When I went on to conventional medicine, my friends and some relatives thought I was injecting something into my body that would be bad for me. They recommended super blue algae, bee sting therapy. I've done very well. My doctors, my neurologist said, get on something right away, get on one of the conventional medications. I know other people with MS who went the alternative route. They went off their meds, they went alternative, they've taken a turn for the worse, and when they want to go back on conventional, they've already set themselves back. So autoimmune diseases, I think it's kind of scary. People go overboard with vitamins that can boost their immune systems, which you don't want to do when you have an autoimmune disease. So I just wanted to comment on how I feel about autoimmune diseases and alternative therapies.
But it's interesting, Joyce, because when you got this diagnosis of MS, immediately you had people around you saying, go the earthy crunchy way, the earthy way.
Right. I was getting articles about bee sting therapy and super blue algae and you know, taking all kinds of vitamin supplements. And actually, I'm just glad I didn't, and I'm glad I never... although it is scary, you know, injecting something into me that I don't really know.
Yeah. But I guess on the conventional side, at least it's been tested, though we've seen questions about how all that works as well. Joyce, thank you. Dr. Offit, does it drive you crazy when you hear about this kind of equivalency that's out in the culture now? Here she is facing MS, and, you know, half her friends say go alternative and half say go to the doctor.
Yes, especially in when she's talking about autoimmune diseases, there are certainly diseases for which conventional medicine doesn't have a cure. Autism, I think, being one disorder that's an example of that. There are certainly certain difficult-to-treat cancers. And when that happens, that's often where alternative therapists will step in. And some of them, I think, can be charlatans in this and be perfectly willing to make a fortune off of your misfortune. And you have to be careful because some of these things can hurt you, and you want to make sure that you're putting yourself in the best position possible. And again, as I said before, be as skeptical of this form of medicine as you are of conventional medicine.
Jeff in Burlington, Vermont. Jeff, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I find this conversation very interesting. One, I'd like to make a statement and then offer a couple of concerns. One is I appreciate the statement earlier about expensive urine. My father was a general practitioner back 30 years ago or so, and I was using supplements, working out in the gym, and his exact statement to me was, you have very expensive urine.
With the implication there being you're just urinating it away, whatever you're taking in all that expensive supplements.
Whatever your body does not want is going to be urinated out.
Mm-hmm.
The concern I have is the people like Dr. Oz, which I'm sure that's not their intent, but do they ride on the border of being ethical? Is there not a bottom line here? I believe Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz, I believe that they're Oprah creations. I'm sure they make very good livings off their programs. I question the length that they go with their approaches to dealing with the medical and psychological when we refer to Dr. Phil. And I believe there was a recent program where colleagues discussed, without being judgmental, how close they ride the line to being ethical.
Let me take that to Dr. Offit, and I appreciate your call, Jeff. Paul Offit, in your remarks today, you're kind of conciliatory toward Dr. Oz. In your book, you're pretty darn tough on him and others.
Well, I think Dr. Oz certainly gives a lot of good advice. Unfortunately, he mixes that in with some terrible advice. I mean, he, for example, he had on his program a faith healer who supposedly cured a woman of cancer, at least this lung mass that was supposedly cancer. That's dangerous advice. I mean, there are certainly many people in this country that believe in faith healing. That you, we just had a death in Philadelphia within the last month or so of a parent who of a child who had bacterial pneumonia. They prayed instead of giving antibiotics, and that obviously didn't work, and the child died. The second child to die in the same family, also of bacterial pneumonia. So I think when you put something like that out there, faith healing as a treatment for cancer, or you know, and as it's a dangerous thing to do. And I think homeopathy, for example, is benign. It's because it doesn't contain any active ingredient. By definition, it's benign. And I think where one is having a self-limited disease, it, in many ways, it can be better than conventional therapy, but you have to be careful. It's a slippery slope. And if you take something that is alternative instead of a conventional medicine that works, you're doing yourself harm. And if you take an alternative medicine because you don't know it's harmful, like alpha-tocopherol, as Dr. Grossman said, most people don't know that because it's not an FDA-regulated industry. And I just don't think you can expect people to know that, given that the FDA isn't looking over the shoulder. When Vioxx was found to be a cause of heart disease, you knew that in a second because the FDA regulated that industry. They put out media alerts, and ultimately that drug was off the market. The same is really not true on the other side.
Terry Grossman, here's a book-length, big critique of alternative medicine. At the same time, you know the appetite for it, $34 billion business. Do you think Dr. Offit will put a dent in the popularity of alternative medicine in this country?
I don't know. I haven't had a chance to read Dr. Offit's book, and I look forward to doing that. I don't know what the future is going to hold, but I know that patients do enjoy having the freedom to choose for themselves what type of medicine. And I think Dr. Offit's correct. When we do have a well-accepted conventional therapy to treat a disease, you know, patients are well advised to utilize that. But when they're facing a disease for which conventional medicine doesn't have a treatment, I think they should also have the freedom to look and explore other options.
Terry Grossman in Golden, Colorado. Dr. Grossman, co-author with Ray Kurzweil of Fantastic Voyage, Live Long Enough to Live Forever. Dr. Grossman, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And Dr. Paul Offit, joining us today from Northfield, New Jersey, author of Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. Dr. Offit, thank you very much for your insights.
Thank you, Tom.
Tomorrow, we're going to talk about a radical rethink on paying for college in Oregon. Free while you're there, maybe 3% of your income for 25 years. Join us for that. This is On Point.